Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo
bhagavate vasudevaya. Could I have some water? You want to get it? Okay. Okay. Here are examples of each of the kinds of poetry, the three levels, and the fourth level, Uttamuttama. Okay, I'm going to read the verse, and then we'll probably need some grammatical look at it to make sure we understand what it means. And then I'm not going to tell you which, because you're looking at the book, you're cheating, but I'm not going to tell you which one of the categories this verse belongs to. And you see if you can figure it out. But if you read the explanation, you'll get the answer. Four types. Look at the verse, but don't look anything past it. Those who have already seen are disqualified from answering the question. Gorim archayitum vasuna nichoye shvashur nidishtahare tvida kananam agata vayamoho megagamas chabovat pringkola paritas chakonta kalata shamashas sarvadisho novidma Pativesha vasani guru kim bhavi sambhavatam bhavitam. Okay, let me try to explain what that means basically. Gordim archaitum. Arch is a 10th class verb, so therefore it has the what looks like causative, but it's just a 10th class ending. In order to worship Gauri, goddess Gauri. What about? Durga. But I know we want to read Radha and Krishna and everything. They're there. They're there in the verse, don't we? Prasuna nichaye. Shrush. Okay. Nichaya. Well, nichaya. I'm saying vichaye. Here, vichaya is the activity of collecting. Okay? Prasuna, flowers. Locative, in the activity of collecting flowers. Picking flowers, if you want. Vichaya. Because when you pick something, you're taking it away from the tree. So the prefix V is there to collect it away. Or pick, pluck flowers. Shvashur nidishta, that's a samasa. Nidishta, appointed, or rather signed, ordered by the mother, the sister, Shrashu's sister-in-law or mother-in-law? Look it up, Shrashu.
Mother-in-law.
So ordered by the mother-in-law, or appointed, you know, assigned this duty by the mother-in-law, assigned to the duty of collecting flowers in order to worship Gauri by the mother-in-law, Hare Krida Kananam Agata. Okay, there's a feminine subject here who has come to the pleasure garden, Krida Kananam, of Hari. Vayam. Okay, Vayam is plural, so we have a feminine plural subject. I think it's just a rhetorical plural. There's one gopi speaking. We have come to the pleasure garden of Krishna after having been ordered by our mother-in-law to go collect flowers for worshipping Gauri. Oh, and look, and just see, Megagamas Chabhavat. And now the clouds have come. There's an approach of clouds. Prinkola paritas chakantakalata. And all around paritas, the thorny creeper, the thorny creepers, the thorny vines, are prankola. They're very, they're fickle. These naughty, thorny vines are all around. Shamascha, Sarvodisha, and all the directions have become dark blue. Dark. So it's cloudy and getting dark. A storm seems to be coming, and all these thorn bushes are all over the place. Novid ma prativesha vasani. This is evocative. My dear neighbor, talking to her neighbor. We don't know. Guru kim bhavi sambhavitam. What are our elder? I think this is singular in the sense of plural. What our elders are going to say, or maybe my mother-in-law. What is she going to say? What is she going to think, rather? So on the surface, the story is, it's explained by Vishnu Chakravarti. One gopi is out in the forest and she runs into another one, actually one of her neighbors, the gopi who lives next door, and they both meet themselves way out in the forest. So the first gopi is saying this to the second gopi. She's saying, all these difficulties, I don't know what my elder is going to say. Now, what's suggested here, it's not said in the words, is, this is the dhwani, suggestion, that this first gopi is actually out there to meet with Krishna, and she doesn't want her neighbor to know about it. She's going to get in trouble if her neighbor knows about it. So she's making up a story that my mother-in-law sent me out here to go pick flowers for Gauri, and I accidentally stumbled into Krishna's garden, and now the clouds are coming and it's getting dark and there's all these thorn bushes. I'm getting all scratched up, and when I get home, I don't know what my mother-in-law is going to say to me about this. The actual story that Vishwanath explains is that she got scratched up by Krishna in their pleasure sports, and she's trying to conceal the fact by blaming the bushes, the thorn bushes, on it. And she's got Krishna on her mind, so she's talking about the dark clouds coming and the sky getting, everywhere it's Shyama. But it's actually she has Krishna on her mind. Yeah. Yeah. I see. She hasn't yet met Krishna. Okay, I'm sorry. This is the explanation given by Kavi Karnaboy. She's intending to go meet Krishna. But she's intending that when she gets home, there are going to be telltale signs on her. And she's trying to cover up in advance by saying that, there's thorn bushes all around and it's getting dark. So I'm going to get scratched up, and I don't know what my mother-in-law is going to say. She's hoping that the second gopi, having heard this story, these excuses, is going to back up for her back at home and tell the elder, the mother-in-law, that the reason why she's scratched up is because it got dark and there were thorn bushes around. That's the implication. So this is considered what? What do you think? What's the judgment? Is this first, second, or third class poetry? You say uttama. Why do you say uttama? Uttama. Do you see a further reverberation of additional dhwanis here? No. Oh, just uttama. Okay, I heard it twice. It's an echo. Okay, you said uttama. Why do you think? You just like it. It's got a beat to it. Yeah, but that's only one step. That's one. That's a single dhwani. If what's suggested led to another suggestion, then it would be double. Then you could call it uttama uttama. What other reason can you call it uttama uttama for? What other qualification? The meaning, the sound and the meaning has to be both, not just one or the other. Well, See, now this is where we get subtle. You know, you could say, well, this the sound and meaning here is great. I want to, give it an uttama. It really comes to having experience and a taste for it. These are subtle judgments. You know, where do you draw the line between uttama and uttama uttama? When do you decide that even though there's only single plain dwanis here, there's no, reverberations, but still, because the language and the meaning is so expressive, therefore, we should call it it's a value judgment. So it's the actual application of these techniques is very subtle. Kavi Karnapur considers it uttama. He has another example of uttama uttama later on. Yes. Yes.
So these are all comparing to different things like Krishna's colors compared to
clouds. So those comparisons are upama alankar, they're alankars. In themselves they're not dwani, they're just alankars, but alankars are good too. When an alankar creates a dwani, then it's really serving a purpose. But just alankars by themselves are just decoration. Alankar doesn't always do suggesting. Sometimes it does. Sometimes you just have alankars that don't do any suggesting, so they're not as important. Here you say they do. Well, what it is the whole meaning, of the verse, not individual words. It's not this particular individual words here that are carrying all the dwani. No, the dwani is the whole story is created by the whole story. The whole verse put together is creating the whole story of this, this made up story about why she's wandering around the forest, very close to where Krishna is. What's she doing there? That whole story she makes up is creating the dwani. So so there are individual elements of it. There's ornaments involved and various attractive features, but it's the whole story together that makes the dwani, creates the dwani, in this case. Some other verse, you may find one particular word that creates the dwani. But here it's the whole narration. Okay. So she's trying to conceal the fact that she's intending to meet with Krishna. She doesn't want her neighbor to know about it, and she especially doesn't want her elders back at home to hear about it. So she's arranging so that the neighbor will have an alibi story to tell, and that the neighbors are convinced of it and backs up for her back at home. Yes.
So these torrents is giving a reason why, because Krishna scratches her?
Yes.
Krishna scratches her?
Yes.
Okay, that's part of immersed love. Sometimes they do that, I don't know.
That's the gopis know about this. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, I mean, how do they... should I ask?
Fingernails. Yeah. Okay. You'll have to take birth as a gopi to find out about it. Okay, so because here what is expressed by the suggestion, the vyangya, the idea that is expressed is more remarkable than the literal meaning. Literal meaning is interesting, but what's the implied story is even more remarkable. There's gopis out there to meet Krishna, and she's trying to hide the fact. Therefore, it's uttama kavya, because there's dwani, and what the dwani expresses, what is suggested, is more remarkable, more emotionally stimulating than the literal meaning. Okay? Yes. Okay, but what's implied should be what's suggested should be even more remarkable. If the words themselves, the literal meaning, is just as remarkable as what's implied, then it's only Madhyama. Because maybe you're talking in too many fancy words. You're talking too fancy for what you're saying. If the implied and the suggested message is no more remarkable than the literal meaning, then the literal meaning is too prominent. You know, then it just becomes Madhyama, mediocre poetry. You shouldn't, you know, just like if you were going to say a very simple thing, like you left your door open, and you turned it into a grand oration, you know, with fancy words. That's not good poetry. That's just ridiculous. Yeah. You know, so your means shouldn't be fancier than what you're trying to accomplish by them. Okay. Now another example. Uttamasya purushasya vanantam satyam ali kusam maya gatasi ayayur madukaras tava paschad dukshaha parimalohi varitum. Again, this is a conversation between two gopis. Okay, there's a locative absolute here, sati. It's just a masculine. I wonder why. Should be satyam in the feminine. But anyway, being inside, within the garden of the Uttama Purusha, okay, you have gone for the purpose of, you've gone to collect, Ali is just evocative, O Gopi, you've gone for flowers, to collect flowers. Bees, Madhukaras, have come behind you. They're following you. Bees are following you. Dukshaha parimalohi varitum. It's difficult to keep away the fragrance. Okay, you've gone inside the forest of the Uttama Purusha, O Gopi, to collect flowers, and now I see the bees are following you. It's really difficult to keep away that fragrance. Apparently the fragrance of the flowers. Now, okay, what's going on here that makes it poetry is that there is a double entendre. This is double entendre, double meaning. This is one of the alankars called shlesha, where the same word can be understood in two different ways in the same context. So it makes an ambiguity or a double meaning. Because, and this has to do with one particular phrase here, this is not the whole verse, just one phrase consisting of two words. Uttamasya purushasya. What does that mean? Who is that? Oh, no, Krishna. We're not thinking it's somebody else than Krishna. But Uttama Purusha, in the context of a forest, paramour, no, but Uttama Purusha means God, the Supreme Person. No, this is botanical. Which? Gardener. Uttama Purusha? It's a tree. Yeah, that's it. It's the Purnaga tree. The name of the tree is Purnaga. And another name of it, according to the Amarakosha, is that it can also be called the Purusha. Purnaga tree is also called Purusha. And then Uttama Purusha would be an excellent, you know, really good Purusha trees. So you've gone inside the forest of the excellent Purnaga trees. And Purnaga must be a very fragrant tree, a flower, a Purnaga flower. And so on one level, the story is just, you know, you went to pick flowers, the punnaga flowers from the forest there, and you know, now you're covered with the fragrance and the bees are following you. But of course, the second meaning is Uttama Purusha is Krishna. You went into Krishna's forest. So, okay, there is a dwani there, and it's based on the double entendre. Here the alankar, the shlesha, the double entendre, is creating an idea, a suggestion of the idea that she actually went to meet with Krishna in his forest. But he says it's only Madhyama. Why? Yes?
Because the dwani is a more obvious meaning. Uttama Purusha is more obviously. It's not hidden more than the direct.
The dwani here also
seems. Sorry?
Because of the quality of the dwani.
Yeah, well, we're talking about the quality. There is dwani. The double entendre of Purusha creates the dwani of suggesting that we're really talking about meeting with Krishna. Yes. You're reading the commentary. Okay. I'm trying to get the devotees to guess without the commentary, and then look at the commentary. Yes? Yes? Sometimes. It's not just the fact that it was alankara that created the problem is that shlesha, it's a sort of funny shlesha. I mean, not everybody knows that punnaga is the name of, Purusha is the name of a tree. Usually you don't think of Purusha as the name of a tree. Somebody may know that, but it's something you have to think about. You know, it's just because it's not obvious enough, actually, not the other way around. Because even someone who may know botany doesn't usually think of Purusha as the name of a tree. And so you got to, you know, think about it, or maybe even have to look in the dictionary to see what's going on. So because you're slowed down, you have to think about it, therefore it's not first class. You know, it's there, but it's just not clear enough. You know, you got to think about it. You know, it slows you down. Yes? By shlesha?
By shlesha.
No, not necessarily. It's just that here it's just not obvious. You know, and you can use shlesha more effectively.
So,
you can use shlesha in such a way that anybody with a poetic sensibility will catch it right away. But this is more obscure. It's an obscure shlesha. There's nothing wrong with using shlesha as an ornament to express dwani. But here it's just too obscure. And also another thing is what's so profound about it? You know, it doesn't really shake you up. It doesn't create enough chamatkar to really make it first class. You know, the dwani is there, but it doesn't really create a very heavy sense of amazement. Yes?
Is the suggested meaning is more obvious than the literal meaning?
No, not more obvious, but the suggested meaning is more obvious. How would that work? Because the literal meaning always comes first. You always have to catch the literal meaning first. If you can't understand the literal meaning, then you're not going to be able to make sense out of, you're not going to be able to find any suggested meaning. The literal meaning makes the suggestion. So if the literal meaning is vague and not understandable, then you're not going to have access to the suggested meaning. No, it's a question of being remarkable. That the suggested meaning should be, to be first class, the suggested meaning should be more awe-inspiring than the literal meaning. Here it really isn't. You know, there's nothing so much remarkable about the suggested meaning. Okay, it means Krishna instead of some tree. You know, but all we've done is mention Krishna. There's nothing really, you know, evocative of great emotions out of that. So it's not a question of being not obvious enough. It's a question of not being remarkable enough, not being amazing enough. Yeah, yeah, you're right. Here, the suggested meaning is right on the surface. It doesn't. It's not much of a suggestion because it's obvious to everybody. And the fact that it's supposed to mean a tree, not many people know that. Yeah, you're right. The suggested meaning is too obvious. It's not much of a suggestion because it's the first thing you think anyway, that it means Krishna. Yes.
When I read this, I thought the suggestion was...
Okay, you thought something else.
When I read this, I thought the suggestion was that the smell of the flowers was... the smell of Krishna, like Krishna's
fragrance. It's really Krishna's smell. Yeah, that's...
Yeah.
That makes it somewhat remarkable. That adds to the value of the... It gives some value to the Shlesha. It's not just a play on words for the sake of a play on words. But then you get the idea that, that the smell is... You think it's the smell of flowers, but it's really Krishna's smell. The Krishna smells better than flowers. That's remarkable. So it's uttama. It's not local. It's not third class. At least it's second class. When the suggestion is there, but it doesn't do anything remarkable, it doesn't create any remarkable reaction, then it's third class. Here, at least, we have the remarkable idea that what we think is the smell of flowers is really Krishna's smell. That's remarkable.
How's this less remarkable than the first one?
It's a matter of judgment.
I think it's the rest. In the first one, it's like the gopis trying to
be
major or superior.
Maybe, but actually, one thing is that actually, Kavi Karnapur and Vishwanath didn't say that. That was my idea, that it's not remarkable enough. They didn't even mention that. Their comment, why it's Madhyama, is that it's based on a double entendre that's not obvious, and you have to think about it. That's the problem. That's what drags it down. It's a real fault. It's a real fault. Yeah, it does. Because when the reader has to puzzle over something before he can react to it, then the reaction is spoiled to some extent. Yes.
We can use a mic because it's being recorded. Everybody can use a mic.
Okay, everybody talking into the mic, please.
One of the characteristics of a kavi should be sarvagama kovidaha. So it should be obvious for a kavi in the beginning itself it is declared that, the disclaimer. So it should not be obscure for such a person. It's obscure for us because we are not much aware of the botanical different agamas and all.
The kavi should be expert in all kinds of knowledge. But what about the audience? They have to be, they have to understand what the kavi is saying. If the kavi is, absorbed every book in the library, and he's saying things that none of his readers are going to follow, then that doesn't work. That's not good communication. It's not only the poet has to be expert, but he has to say things that his readers are going to understand. Not ordinary people. They're connoisseurs. They're qualified hearers. But still, they may not know all the things that the kavi knows. So he has to, say things that his readers are going to understand. I may know, something of, this language or that language, and you don't know it. If I start using phrases from that language, you're not going to understand what I'm saying. So that's not communication. Yes?
I think also one thing is that there are connoisseurs and they could know more than the others. But then if a person is following proper Vedic life, then there are things that can be expected to be known by everyone. Like if a person says Purnima, different tithis.
Yes, any Brahmin or any civilized person should know.
Yeah, and it's ignorance to not know it. So.
Yes. Yes. He can use such ideas, but then poetry involves more than just the ideas that each word expresses. There are the subtleties of poetry, the way ideas are combined and the emotions that are evoked. There you have to be a connoisseur, not just a civilized person. You can be a civilized person, but just be real straight-minded and have no imagination and no poetic sense. And then you're not really a connoisseur. You know, I could say things to you that you'll understand, but if I speak poetry, you may not follow it, if you have no poetic taste. Okay, I think we stop now. 12:04. Okay, so we have examples so far of Uttama and Madhyama, and so we're left with the other two kinds. But then we're going to consider also the upgraded examples, examples of something that would have been one level but is pushed up one level by having very remarkable sound and meaning. Yes. So that will be six examples, I think. Or five examples altogether. Yeah.
Yes, they're classifying clearly the examples and which category they belong to. But I think only if we are able to pick up verses and say this is Uttamam,
yes,
then we can clearly say that we have understood.
Yes, I mean, and that's hard. That's not just a matter of memorizing the definitions. That's a subtle sense. You have to get a feeling for it and have some experience in it.
Maybe we should do some assignments for that.
We can try, but I'm not so great at that. I'm just a beginner myself. We shouldn't have to. I mean, if you want to, we have a whole library full of non-devotional poetry. We have some, you know, about 20, 30 books upstairs. Yes. Yes. You can also take the Bhagavatam. Yeah. We shouldn't have to go to non-devotional literature. Kavi Karnapur doesn't give any non-devotee poets examples. Makes up all his own examples. No, I think he just wanted, he's an excellent poet. He said, I can write my own poems. I'll just, you know, why do I have to borrow someone else's? He just wanted to share some of his poetry with us. It's consistent. It's one voice. And he actually, what he does is he has very similar examples with just slight variations. It's interesting how it's almost the same verse, but he modifies it a little bit to show a different feature. Yes.
Is it that here and in Jiva Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Svesha, they give many verses from different places, but not from Bhagavatam? Is it like true? And what is the reason for that? Like, because Bhagavatam is full of all these varieties of.
Well, Bhagavatam is not. How to say? The poetry in the Bhagavatam is not first of all poetry. It's not written as stylized poetry. The poetry in it is more subtle. It's less obvious. Okay, so sometimes, you know, the Bhagavatam, just like some poets use a very fancy style and other poets use a very simple style, but it's very profound. But to dig into those profundities takes more investigation. You have to look very carefully to see in the more profound poetry, in the more apparently simple poetry, that's actually very deep. It takes some very deep examination to discover the depth of it. And so for the purpose of an elementary textbook, that may not be suitable. Better to use obvious examples. So the poetry in the Bhagavatam is not so obvious always. It's profound and deep, but it's hidden. So therefore, for examples in a beginner's textbook, they may not be so suitable. You can write a separate book about poetry in the Bhagavatam, but it would have to be a very advanced textbook, you know, looking very deeply into it.
Has any of our acharyas explained, in any of the books, some verses from Bhagavatam like that?
No, there's just some isolated mention of poetic devices in some of the commentaries, but generally not much. Why not? I don't know. Yeah. Could be more. I mean, someone could write a new commentary on Bhagavatam, looking especially at the poetic elements. There is a book on, I have in the library, on poetic devices in the Mahabharata. There's a whole book on that, Mahabharata. And another book about poetic devices in the Rig Veda. So it's a topic that can be pursued. No one's done it in systematically or in depth. Okay, we'll stop. Thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Alankara Kosta Bhakti Jaya.